What is up, Cycling Oklahoma? Thank you so much for tuning in for, once again, another episode. This one's a little different, a little strange for me to be publishing and putting out, and I'm going to not lie to you here that I was very nervous about doing this one. Perrin, whenever we did her podcast, so if you haven't listened to that episode, go back, listen to Perrin's episode. She's an amazing woman, amazing human, and has a lot going on, but she asked if she could interview me and tell a little bit more about my story, so I agreed to it. We were finally able to put it together and make it happen and kind of sit down and chat and let you know a little bit more about my story and how I got involved in cycling and endurance sports and how I opened the endurance Ellis Endurance Lab and all of those good things. So, I don't do well with talking about myself or kind of telling the things that I've achieved and done in my past and or my goals and dreams. It's not a strong suit for me. And so it was a little uncomfortable for me to sit down and do this, but I was so thankful and so glad that she asked me to do it and so honored actually that she would take time out of her day and want to sit down and get to know me a little bit more in that way. And so this episode is all about me. Like I said, a little uncomfortable, but hopefully you learned something. You'll learn a few more things about how I set up Ellis Endurance Lab and why I set it up, kind of the future of where I plan on going with the shop, and a little bit about my past. So I did not come to cycling at an early age or endurance sports at an early age. I had a completely different athletic past. So we get into all that. We cover all that. So thank you so much for listening. If you have things to say about this, then shoot me a message. Hopefully you enjoy it. And I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen and to spread the word about this awesome podcast and all the cool people that we get to talk to outside of my episode. Hopefully you're enjoying them. And hopefully you're learning a little bit something about the people that you ride with and you see every day. So thanks again. Please don't forget to subscribe to the episode and to the podcast. Tell your friends about it. I've had some great recommendations for guests. So hopefully I can get them on board really, really soon. And we'll let you know. We will have a few weeks in the remaining part of this year in 2021 where I don't put out episodes because of traveling and just some life changes going on. And then we also have the holidays coming up. So it's, sometimes it's kind of hard to nail down guests, but going to do my best to get people on for the rest of the year. But there may be some weeks where we don't have episodes. So just give you a little bit of a warning now. So thanks again for tuning in. I really appreciate you guys and give me any feedback if you have it. And don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to pass on the message that we have some awesome people in this community, so I hope you enjoy.
Cool. Ryan, thank you so much. So this is Perrin Duncan. I was on one of the episodes a few episodes back, but one of the things that I really wanted to do whenever Ryan asked me to come on was to interview him because he is such an asset to our community. And I feel like it's such a gift that Ryan has gone out and interviewed so many people and told their stories. But I feel that many of us can agree that we're all interested in knowing you, Ryan, and knowing you a little bit more. And I honestly don't know really anything about you aside from the bits that I've heard through the podcast, through other people's super positive experiences with you as a bike fitter, and just an all around good person. So Ryan, thanks so much for making this time.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Now I understand why everybody's nervous when they come in. Cause like I am, this is the most nervous I've been on a podcast. Since awesome. I've been doing this. So I get it now being on the other side. So yeah, you brought it up to want to do this. And there's been several people that have sent me messages like, hey, I want to hear a podcast, like an episode with you. So I guess we're at the bottom of the barrel already. So here we are.
Okay. So I think that I honestly just want to start with like, Ryan, where'd you grow up? Tell me a little bit about, sort of your upbringing and maybe what led you into the world of cycling.
All right. So I grew up in El Reno, smaller town about 30 minutes west of Oklahoma City. I grew up playing golf. My dad plays golf. My brother plays golf. Mom, I think she's played once in her life. But played all the sports growing up, just like every like little kid does, whatever. Golf kind of in seventh grade, you kind of have to make the choice, like, what are you going to play? Because everything, you know, with seasons or whatever. So I chose golf and it worked out. It was good. It was fun. We had a really good group of guys growing up that we all played with. We were all like the same age. Like all, we were all like, so my senior, my golf team, my senior year of high school, we were all five seniors. So we kind of all grew up together. Cool. And it was fun and we were pretty good. And, my brother was really good growing up in golf. One of the top guys in the country. And so watching him was always drove me to be more competitive and all that kind of stuff, even though I never even sniffed beating him ever until we got much older in life. But, so awesome. Watched him go to college and play golf for free. And so that was the thing. Dad always said, you know, like you can, however you want to go to school, that's fine. Either you can like be really smart and get free school. You can have a job and get help pay for school, or you can do sports, and pay for school, whatever. But if you do sports or whatever, then you don't have to work in the summers.
Okay.
So until after you go to college. Okay. And I was like, oh man, I don't have to work. That sounds like a really good way to go.
Sweet deal.
Yeah, sweet deal. So I just went all in on golf and that's what paid for college. So I went to Oklahoma City University.
And what did you study there?
Funny story. I went to OCU to study religion. I wanted to be a college minister.
How interesting.
Yeah. And so that was like, I grew up really hardcore Southern Baptist life, sure. in the small town. And so that kind of shaped everything. I went to OCU as a Methodist university. I grew up hardcore Southern Baptist. I mean, we're talking like president of the FCA, like never went out, never. I didn't even drink my first drink until like 22. Like my junior year of college. And so I was like so straight laced.
Yeah.
And after about 2 years of OCU law or religion department, I was over it. I realized that is not what I wanted to do. I hated
it. Was there a moment that you realized like this just isn't for me?
Yeah. It was.
What was it?
Well, because I think it's different if the way I grew up and then going to a very liberal arts university and the golf team, I was the only one that was really kind of like that was really, so I was always the DD. They loved having me on the team because they were like, sweet, we can do whatever we want. We always have a sober guy to drive us. But I remember going to my religion classes that we had and the people that were in the religion major with me, I didn't fit in with any of them. Like we were just completely different personality, completely different things. And then some of them would go out and just get like smash drunk on Saturday night and then go teach Sunday school Sunday morning. And I'm like, this doesn't add up to me.
Yeah, like, it felt like a big hypocrisy.
Yeah, I just wasn't into that. I'm like, it's pick a lane, like whatever it is.
Yeah, and so, it's fine. But yeah, also exactly. Like what's going on here?
100%. And that's when it like dawned on me. I was like, yeah, this isn't for me. I don't want to do this anymore. And so I switched my major to, I was like looking around like, what can I do to just get a piece of paper and play golf? Because I just wanted to play golf. Yeah. That was it.
Cool.
And so I went mass comm, public relations. And so did that, loved it, did some advertising classes, like that kind of stuff. But I knew I did not want to do PR for a job.
Okay. Why is that?
I'm really honest.
Yeah.
And sometimes to a fault, like I speak up too much sometimes and don't know when to shut up, especially back then.
Okay.
And I'm like, I don't want to go to a job where I have to fix someone else's BS.
Sure.
Like
sure.
You screw up. I'm like, this is your problem, not my problem.
Right.
And I didn't want to just like sit in an office and don't do well with just doing one thing. And I didn't want to have like an office job or a desk job or any of that kind of stuff. So I didn't know what I wanted to do. I still kind of don't know what I want to do in life.
Yeah.
As a grown up.
That's a good thing. I always tell people, if you know exactly what you want to do and are perfectly content in life and don't want to change a thing, you're probably dead.
I agree.
You know, it's like you're either dead or like almost there.
Yeah.
I think people should always be seeking the next adventure.
I totally agree. And so that's how, just played golf all through school and we were pretty good. And, I was decent through school. You know, I played in all the tournaments, went to all the stuff and, we won nationals my senior year. So
that's incredible. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, so, pretty good.
So, well, my junior, talk about the booze thing. We'll circle back to that. I told them going into my junior year, cause we were like number one in the nation and we were good. And so we should have won that year. And I was like, okay, if we win nationals, I'm boozing.
Yeah.
And if we choke it off, like depending on the situation, because they always want to make a drink. And you hadn't
drank to ever. This point, no. But you were like, "This is going to
like,
be the time."
I was like, "If we win, I'm going to celebrate." Yeah, yeah, I'll celebrate with you guys. And so, I'd played pretty good, and we blew it that year, like blew it. And so on the way home, I was like, "Screw it, this is the time." Yeah. So yeah, so that was the first time I drank, was after junior year nationals.
Okay.
And then senior year, we were really good again. We had some really good freshmen that kind of got us over the hump. So we won nationals that year. I was an All-American that year, and then I came back for and helped out the next year just to help the team out, like as a grad assistant kind of thing, just for fun, because I just love the guys and I didn't want to get away from it. And
yeah, and coming back to your original interest in like serving the community,
yeah,
as a minister mm-hmm. on a campus, like there's different ways you can do that.
Yeah, agree. And then yeah, so after I graduated, I came back for really for like 2 or 3 years. I kind of helped out the team, like with whatever coach needed, because it's like low budget, like, you know, it's like always needing help with something.
Sure.
And they continued to win, and I don't even know how many nationals that they won. So that was the first time they'd ever won.
How cool.
Was my senior year. But the group now, I mean, I think they've won like, gosh, 11, 12, 13 national championships since we won our first one my senior year. So
that's awesome. You yeah. paved the way.
Well, we had a good group of dudes, like really good group of guys. And so it was fun. That was, and then I played, didn't play, want to play pro. Like I realized early on, like those guys are like real good, like yeah. real good. So I played some big amateur stuff and qualified for like a US mid-am, which is like a big qualification process to go to it. So I went to qualified for one of those, which was really cool.
Cool.
And played some big amateur tournaments after college, but I knew that was going to be the extent. And then when I was done with that, I was like, I need a new thing.
Yeah. So this is a few years after college.
After college.
Kind of yeah. like, I'm going to
over it.
Give up on
yeah.
golf.
Yeah, I was tired of playing. And so there was a couple of people that were going to do like a run. They were like, let's do the half marathon. Let's do the half marathon at Oklahoma City.
Okay.
I'm like, I hate cardio. It's miserable. I love weight training.
Sure.
Hate cardio.
Okay.
It's like, okay, if everybody's going to sign up and do it, I'll do that. That'll make me do it.
Right.
So
when you say everybody, this is just like a group of friends.
A group
that
of friends.
Had,
yeah. Yeah. And actually my boss now, Kit, who you've met,
yeah,
she was part of that group then
no
too.
Way, yeah. That's awesome.
And so I was like, okay, I'll do that. Well, fast forward, no one ended up doing it besides me. They all bailed. And then I realized, like, again, back to my shiny thing, running was like, I got bored. So I bought a bike.
Okay.
And then I was like, okay, that was fun.
What was your first bike?
It was a Felt road bike that I bought used at Al's up on Northwest
Perfect.
Expressway. It was like
awesome.
$500. And I remember getting home and I was like, how the hell do you air up the tires? Because these do not look like my car tires.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with these valves? So then it's like, oh, it's going to be so embarrassing. I have to go back up there and ask them, how do you air up the tires? You know?
Sure.
So yeah, I had no idea what to do or how to do it. And I remember the first ride around Hefner, they were like, how fast did you go? Like some friends were like, how fast did you ride? And I was like, dude, I killed. I think I averaged like 15. Like I was flying. And like two rides later, I was out there and I really felt like I was killing it on the dam. Yeah. And then two rollerbladers passed me. And I was like,
so awesome.
Well, then come to find out it's Rob Bell and Alex, who were like top rollerbladers in the nation, which made me feel better. But still, I couldn't hang with two rollerbladers.
It's so hilarious.
That was my intro to cycling.
And I love that so much.
And so I did the marathon. And then like 2 months later, I did an Olympic in El Reno.
Okay.
Olympic triathlon.
Wow. Awesome.
Because I was just bored with running. So I'm like, well, I got to do what's next. It's always like, what's next?
And so, did you have a history with swimming?
No, I had no idea. I hired someone to teach me.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I could swim, but I couldn't swim my face in the water, like for real.
Yeah.
And so I just hired someone from El Reno, like that taught swim lessons. Like, can you show me what to do? Because I have no idea what to do.
So were you still living in El Reno?
No, I lived in Oklahoma City. So after my junior college, I never went home.
Okay.
I just stayed in the city.
Okay. So at this point,
it was like 08, 07.
Because, Ryan, there's like so many bits of your history too that I'm trying to piece together. Like you worked at Schlegel's for a little bit.
In like 2010 and 11, I worked there for about 18 months.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And so that was after this.
So I did the Olympic in El Reno, and then like 2 weeks later, I did a half iron in Kansas.
No way.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Cause it's like once That's you're in, awesome. You're like all in.
Yeah.
Like every other endurance athlete. And then it just snowballed from there. I got obsessed with it and learned everything I could. And then I owned I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I ended up doing random things and ended up owning a UPS store in Edmond.
Okay.
And a laundromat in Bethany and some real estate.
Interesting. And then, do you still own any of that?
I wish I still owned the UPS store. Yeah. That's the one thing I wish I still had. And all that. I sold the UPS store to buy more real estate, and then the 08-09 crash hit, and I did not position everything well and had a whole crash and burn. And that's when I told Schlegel, I was like, dude, just, I don't care what you pay me. I don't care what I'm doing. I just need a break from life.
Sure.
And so he's like, sweet, my fitter is going to be going back to med school. So why don't you come? I'll teach you how to do bike fits. And that's how it all started into this world.
Yeah. Okay. And so at that point, were you already involved in TriOKC as well?
Yes.
Okay.
But just as a member.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, yeah, TriOKC and team and training. And that's how I met Steve. Is I was a friend of mine. She was doing the swim lessons for team and training. And she was like, hey, we have like 15 people. I need help.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I'll come help. This is cool. I love it. And so that's how I got involved in team and training and met Schlegel and with all the tri coaching and all that stuff.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And so Steve taught you your initial bike fit.
Yeah. He kind of showed me the basics, and Aaron Smathers, was their fitter.
Okay.
And Aaron was going to try to go back, was trying to go to med school.
Okay.
And he was their fitter, and he was really good. And he taught me a lot of stuff too, but he did all the fancy fits and the paid fits. And I kind of did all the ones that like new bike sales. And if somebody came in and Aaron wasn't there, I would kind of like help check things out. But Aaron was like the paid fitter essentially. Sure. And then I would do all the new bike sale fits. And then I went off and did a FIST certification, which is, people know Slow Twitch website.
Okay.
The guy that runs that does basically a triathlon fit certification.
Cool.
He like invented the first tri bike, essentially the Quantaroo. And so he does a fit certification. So I did that whenever I worked at Schlegel's and kind of got more into that piece of it. And then just kind of ended that for about 18 months at the shop and then went back to the real world.
Okay. So 18 months at the shop. And then what was your next adventure after that?
My college roommate got played golf with.
Okay.
He was the CEO of an oil company, and his investors bought it was like a smoothie yogurt. So think of like soft serve yogurt, like, what was it? Orange leaf.
Yeah.
So that with healthy smoothies, they had both concepts.
Okay.
And it was out of Florida. And so they bought Oklahoma and North Texas area rights. And Nick was like, you should come like run this for us. And I was like, I don't have a clue, but sure. That sounds great.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. And so, we opened up a yogurt place in Norman, and then we opened up a full blown place in Edmond by Mitch Park. Right next to Uptown Market.
Sure.
So we were the very first shop in that strip center that's there. And so we opened that up. Gosh, I don't even know what year that was. So we were, and I think the place is still there. It's just a different name.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in high school whenever that opened. I think we would go over.
Yeah. So we had food and smoothies and yogurt. So I built all that out. And the dream was, is that we would build a couple of them, own them corporately, and then we would franchise them. And then I would help the franchisees like find locations, build their stores, and oversee all of the stuff.
Yeah.
So we got those two open, and then the corporate in Florida sucked so bad. Like we couldn't get anything here. We couldn't get any of our branded stuff here. Like they thought they had this deal worked out with US Foods and it fell through. Long story short, it sucked. And Kit came in one day. So we were friends from a previous life.
Okay.
And, she came in one day and I was like, what are you doing? I haven't seen you in years. Like, where have you been?
Yeah.
And so we were just shooting the breeze, and she told me, that she'd got the CEO job at the Better Business Bureau. And we laughed forever. Cause I'm like, who in the hell would hire you as a CEO? And she's like, I don't know. It's crazy. It's so funny. It's so weird. And she's like, you should come work with me. And I'm like, what are we going to do? She's like, I want you to run my sales team.
Sure.
Because I don't have one and I want to bring it in house. We third partied it. And I was like, I don't know how to do that. She's like, I don't either. We'll figure it out. So we had lunch. I was like, how much am I going to get paid? How do we sell? What do we sell? And like all this stuff. And she's like, I have no idea. And I was like, cool, let's do that. Awesome. And so I put in my notice like 2 days later. And yeah, so now it's been 8.5 years working with Kit at the Better Business Bureau.
Crazy. Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. But then in addition to that, you finished working at Schlegel's. That was an 18-month stint. And then you were doing this healthy food, frozen yogurt thing. Were you always on the side doing bike fits still?
A little bit. So I've done like endurance sport coaching since like 09. Okay. 10, somewhere like when I was going to get involved with stuff.
Yeah. So like a year after you had started doing endurance sports, yeah. you were like, I'm going to start coaching people. Yeah.
And so that I went off and got USA triathlon certification, did USA cycling certification, team and training certification. Like I just couldn't get enough of it.
Cool.
And just tried to learn as much as I could and started helping other, like I started coaching through like the team and training because these are complete newbies who know nothing.
Yeah.
So I kind of could get my feet wet through that.
Sure.
And then it just kind of went and I still do it. So mainly I just do triathletes and endurance runners.
Okay.
Cycling stuff is way too complicated and I'm not in that world as far as like a crit style thing. So like sure. training plan. So I refer that out, or a cyclocross training plan. I refer that to several other guys. But yeah, that's how I got involved in that. And so I've always had that piece of the business
okay.
that I've always done.
Okay. So then when did you start branding yourself as Alice Endurance?
Just when I opened this place.
Okay.
So I had Conquer Training.
Sort of recently.
Yeah. About 2 years ago.
Okay.
So Conquer Training was the training business okay. and that's what I've always had. And then a couple of buddies, we got together. There was like six of us originally back in like 14 and we started Divide and Conquer. And so they came up with a name that wasn't like me trying to like brand it that way.
Sure.
And
we started, but it works.
It worked. Awesome. Yeah. I loved it. And so we started an endurance team of just like, hey, these people need to get together to ride and train and travel together and race together. And so we started that. And at the biggest, we had probably like 50 people in our group. And then people started moving all over the country. And so it was like really awesome.
Wow.
And it's kind of just disappeared as people have like changed and kids have grown and people have moved. And so we've kind of let it go over the past few years. So there was that little piece of it. But and Go Mitch Go, which is an organization I was involved in, it's kind of like team and training, kind of. Okay. I have a strong connection to them. And so we trained, I did a coaching for them for a while
okay.
To take athletes to events and stuff like that. So the coaching has always been in the background.
And is that's still something you're doing?
Yeah.
Under the Conquer Training?
It's kind of rolled it into this
okay.
more than anything else. But yeah, at the most I ever had was the year we took a bunch of athletes. We took like 15 to Ironman Arizona. So that year I had awesome. Like 20 athletes, which was a lot.
That's huge.
It was a lot.
That's pretty full on.
Yeah.
And so are you providing these athletes like training plans, nutrition plans? What's yeah. kind of your go-to?
So the training plans are all done through Training Peaks.
Okay.
And so I do everything through there. Nutrition stuff, I'm not going to give you a nutrition plan of like, eat this for your breakfast. Here's your three options for lunch. It's more of like, you keep a food diary. Let's go through it. Okay, cool. You need to cut the 5 granola bars a day, right? And yeah. the 6 beers. Like have a granola bar, maybe a beer or yeah. two, right? So it's more of like lifestyle nutrition coaching, not so much of like, here's your training or your nutrition plan.
I love that. I feel like that's a really healthy way.
Yes.
And sustainable way to work with an athlete who's also a human being.
Right.
Because, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I think that it can be easy to get like obsessed with nutrition and figuring out how to make it work. But then if you're so hyper focused on a certain plan being what you need to be successful as an athlete, you're going to burn out.
Agree. And you're not going to do it very long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to do it long. And it's one of those things where just clean up what you're already doing. And then let that become normal. And then we can clean it up again. And then we can clean it up again. But a lot of times with endurance athletes, they're like really uber focused on stuff.
Mm.
And so it's hard. More than anything, it's hard to get them out of their own way. Mm. So like, no, just tell me everything I need to eat. And I'm like, no.
No.
I'm not going to do that. Because I don't know what you like, for one. So if I give you this plan, you're not going to stick to it.
Right.
And so it's a waste of my time. It's a waste of your time. You're going to be miserable. And then I'd rather you just eat what you want. And we just figure out like the healthier, better, like add to that or take some of that away. And it's just a much more livable thing.
Sure.
Right? Yeah.
And so Ryan, when you work with athletes, is it most often that they're training for a specific event?
Mostly.
And they come to you and they're like, hey, I'm about to do an Ironman in a year or how, like, what's the lead time typically?
Depends if they're coming off the couch.
Yeah.
So like the year that we took people to Arizona, we had several who had didn't own bikes and we were like, okay, so that was a long stretch. We had, maybe like 6 or 8 months to get them ready. But then like, if you were saying, I'm going to jump in and do an Ironman. Okay. Well, you have a really huge base fitness, right? So you could do one in, where are we at, November, springtime for sure. Like you could definitely do Tulsa, right? So you would start, you know, the true like hardcore block is going to be about a 12-week block. But depending on where you're at starting at, how long do we need before that to get you to the starting block?
Okay.
Right. So, and it depends on what the goal is. I've had some people who want to do a 100-mile trail run, or they just want to do like a 100-mile bike ride.
Yeah.
You know, or some people just like, I have one guy right now who I've coached for a really long time. He hasn't raced in like 2 years, 3 years. I'm like, what do you want to do? Like, let's find an event. Like, come on. And he's just like, I don't know, just keep putting something up there. And I'm like, okay. So, but most of the time it's like, I have an event, help me with this event. And then after the events, they kind of go off and do their own thing for a while until they find their next event. And then we start focusing in and get them going again.
Cool.
Most of the time it's event driven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do they typically find you? Just go into your
word
website,
word of mouth. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. For a while it was like, I was really plugged into tons of stuff, trying to promote it and network and do all the things.
Yeah.
And at this point it's been long enough and there's been so many coaches come and go over the years. Like I'm kind of the only one that's ever like stuck around. So I usually get referrals, and right now I don't have too many. I'm kind of teeter between like 5 and 8 at all times now.
Okay.
And then this time of year, everybody kind of goes away for the off season and does their own thing. And then come January, February, people start showing back up. And so now it's usually around 5 to 8, but 10's like the most I would ever do again.
Okay.
Yeah. There's too much other stuff going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then with your bike fits that you do, like how many are you doing a week? Can you just sell me a little bit on why a bike fit is important and sort of what drives your interest and commitment to doing bike fits?
So right now I still have the day job at the BBB. And so I just do it nights and weekends. So at least one every day during the week.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's been amazing. Like shockingly busy. Way better than I ever dreamed of.
Yeah.
So much. It's been amazing.
That's awesome. I'm super pumped. That.
Thank you.
But seriously.
I'm super excited and like super humbled about how well it's been received.
Cool.
So I have basically one a day, and then sometimes I'll have like two or three. Like if I have to do a touch up fit here and there, or it's an additional bike and we've already done a lot of the pre-screening and I know what we're working with. And it's like, well, I just want to do my gravel bike now or something like that. So I can sometimes do two or three of those on a weekday. And then on the Saturdays I do anywhere from 1 to 2, on a Saturday. And then, but yeah, I fell in love with it because I love working with athletes and I love the body part of it.
Yeah.
And that's what I could never figure out, kind of what I wanted to do, because I'm not like a book smart guy. So I did not want to go back to school.
Sure.
And like suffer through that and get more debt and all that stuff. My brother's a chiro. I wish I would have gone more that direction because you could do so much outside of like the traditional chiro thing. Working with athletes and knowing the body better, I think would be so cool.
Yeah.
So I looked at going back to PT school and all that kind of stuff. And I just like, man, I cannot go back to school. Like,
yeah.
Ugh, sounds awful.
Which is so interesting to me, Ryan, because like at one side, you're like, I'm not book smart, whatever. I'm not really good at school, but you are very good at learning.
Yeah. But because, not in the school setting.
Yeah. Because like you in 1 year picked up being an endurance athlete and then you were training endurance athletes at a really high level.
Yeah. Too. I have really like, I don't take meds for it, but I'm very ADD. So once I find something, I'm all in.
Sure.
And I just get obsessed with it. But sitting at my desk at work, no, doesn't happen. Yeah. Sitting in a classroom, miserable. I have terrible reading comprehension. Like it's always been really bad since I was a little kid. Mm. So reading a book and learning does not work for me.
Yeah.
So like hands-on stuff, seminars, like doing one-on-one with people that are really smart, like that stuff just sinks in and I can't get enough of that. Podcasts, audiobooks, like I'm all over that nonstop. But going and sitting in a classroom just like makes me want to rub my head on the wall.
Sure,
like it's awful. Sure. So yeah, I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. And so I knew I wanted to do something with athletes and with a bike somehow. And I didn't know what it was going to be. And I went with Ryan Smoke, who's a good buddy of mine, who's the one I do the challenge athlete stuff with.
Okay.
To Boulder. He got a bike.
Tell me what challenge athlete is. I'm sorry. That's probably something I should know as well.
Well, challenge athletes, it can be anything, but we've done it with Bryce, who has cerebral palsy. Okay. And so Ryan pulls him in a kayak on the swim, pulls him on the bike and the cart, and then pushes him on the run. And me and Brandon, the guy that I was actually talking to on the phone when you got here, we're basically the pit crew. And so
awesome.
We do everything so Ryan can just show up and do the race, and we take care of Bryce and all the equipment and all the setup and all the teardown and all the in-betweens of things out on the race course and all the stuff. So we're just like his pit crew. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And so Ryan went to get a fit in Boulder, and I went with him, and I walked into the shop and I was like, this is it. It was like three and a half years ago, something like that. I was like, this is what Oklahoma City needs. This is what I need. This is what I want to do. Like, I just instantly knew that this was the next step.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah. And so then Ivan was who the shop was, Ivan O'Gorman, who he's the fitter for like the USA triathlon team, the Olympic team. A lot of it, like Lachlan Morton, Sepp Kuss, like all these really big, well-known Tour de France kind of guys, he does their fits. Yeah. And so I went and spent a week with him before I opened up this to kind of learn more and kind of get back into things. And, him and the guy that works with him have been great mentors to help me when I have questions. I'll send him a video and be like, this guy has this problem. What's going on here? And they'll give me, so it's been a great way for me to learn.
That's awesome.
And they've been a really great resource. So I've kind of like set my shop up similar to kind of what they have done in Boulder.
Cool.
Yeah.
And did you get a bike fit from them?
Well, when I was doing I didn't do a traditional way, but when I was there learning, I was the test dummy.
Sweet. And perfect.
So I got amazing. I scored a free fit out of the deal.
Heck yeah. We love that.
I do. That's great. Yeah.
So Ryan, is there a common like mistake that people are making or something that you frequently see as like a, everyone comes in and this is actually something that really needs to be adjusted on their bike, or does it really just vary?
It varies greatly, which keeps me intrigued.
Yeah.
Every day. The thing that I see that I honestly adjust probably 9 out of 10 times is cleat position.
Okay.
So I do my fits starting from the ground up.
Okay.
And everybody's different depending on, you know, do they stand pigeon toed? Are they duck footed? Like, how do their feet go naturally?
Yeah.
Right. So everything on the bike is symmetrical. Nothing about you is. So your bike should fit you, not you adjusting to fit to this perfect machine.
Sure.
And so I almost always, will do some sort of adjustment to the cleat. And most people run their cleats too far forward. Okay. So, it puts too much.
I probably do.
Most people do. Or they'll see the holes and they're like, I'm just going to set everything up in the middle.
Right.
Well, cause it should be in the middle, which makes total sense. And they never think about it. Or some people run it all the way front. Most of the times I will run it all the way back, depending but 99 times out of 100, I will run them all the way back. Okay. Unless it's somebody with a really small foot or they're a sprinter or something like that. Maybe there's some things that are different, but most people run their cleats too far forward, and that puts too much pressure on the forefoot and gives them like numb toes or hot spots, things like that. And they usually don't have arch support in their shoes. So no matter what you do, every single person needs some sort of arch support in their shoe, in their cycling shoe.
Huh. Yeah. So that's like inserts you get.
Yeah. I mean, and you don't have to have, if you have just a very neutral foot, like you don't have like super high arches or really flat feet or anything crazy going on, just get some basic super feet that you can get off of Amazon or at a running store, something like that. They're like 40-50 bucks, something like that. If you just have normal feet.
Yeah.
If you have something a little bit more, you want something a little bit nicer, there's options out there for you. Like I carry Lake, they're heat moldable, so you can kind of custom a little bit more, and they're like 80 bucks, so you can kind of get a more custom feel for a great price still.
Sure.
And then you can go all the way up to like, you know, $500 or whatever.
And so pardon my ignorance, but like, what does that actually change with your ability to ride your bike?
So a lot of times if the cleat's too far forward, it will cause a lot of like ankling. So your foot is doing way too much movement. It doesn't need to do it. Brings the calf into the pedal stroke a lot, which unless you're a sprinter and you need that like one pedal stroke pop to get up to speed, you know, to get out of the group, that's kind of the only people that really need that pop on their foot.
Sure.
And so it really causes a fatigue in the lower leg, and it really doesn't provide you much power.
Interesting.
And it usually, not always, but usually, they're not riding too much with their glutes and their hamstrings. It's usually a lot more quad driven.
Okay.
So having the cleat too far forward usually causes just foot numbness and hot spots more than anything. But if we can move it back, I always explain it like a squat. You're never going to do a squat off your toes. You always push a squat through the middle of your foot, right? Or your heel. So if we're pushing all of our power through our toes, it's just a matter of time until something gets upset and doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. But if we can push more through the middle part of the foot, we can engage the glute and the hamstring a lot more and actually have a lot more power and more stability. Plus, moving that cleat back into the middle of the foot is going to give more stability in the platform.
Okay.
Right? So you're just a more solid foundation to push power through. And that's another reason that I really like the insoles, because if you have this arch collapse, because you think you're attached to this bike in this tiny little piece of equipment, right? So there's not really a whole lot of stability there, especially if your arch is collapsing a little bit.
Sure.
And that's causing the knee move back and forth. So at some point, something up the chain is going to get pissed off, either a hip, a knee, yeah, or something like that. So if we can give everything a stable surface to push power through, it's going to allow the body to relax and generate power a little bit more efficiently.
Yeah.
And you're not going to have, you're not going to have an overuse issue. And you'll have a lot more stability in the platform. And usually just will give you a better, more stable feeling whenever you're at, when you're pedaling.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Ryan, do you do like road bikes, gravel bikes, tri bikes, mountain bikes?
Mm-hmm.
You do it all.
We do it everything.
Yeah. And what do you see most?
Probably more road bikes just because of where we live.
Yeah.
I had a mountain bike in here yesterday, gravel bike in, and a mountain bike in the day before that. So a little of everything, very few mountain bikes. I would say an equal number of gravel and tri bikes.
Okay.
A lot of fitters hate tri bikes because they're like, oh God.
Why? Just because
there's so many things that you can adjust and change. And yeah, most people don't come from a triathlon background.
Sure.
And so they already have this like roadie tri kind of thing anyways, which
it's so funny.
It is so weird.
It's funny that that is a thing.
It's
though.
Such it's a like, thing.
Oh, you're going to show up on a tri bike.
Yeah. Or they're like, oh, you're a triathlete. Oh, yeah. So it's a whole thing. I get it. Cause when I worked in the shop, I was the only triathlete and they were like, they hated like working on tri bikes cause they're usually like sweaty and corroded and got goo and gels all over them and all the stuff, you know, triathletes don't like clean their bikes
sloppy
that much.
People.
Yes, exactly.
Which is not really true. That's
no, but tri bikes are usually gross. But I love it because there's so many things that you can change.
Yeah.
There's so many places to find comfort.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time because sometimes when you want to adjust something on the aero bars, you may have to undo like 5 bolts to get something to move.
Right.
But it's like, okay. But whenever they lay down and they're like, oh my gosh, I can breathe.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah. Doesn't that feel great? And they're like, yeah, it feels so good. Like that's the, and so you find so much more comfort on a tri bike, like with adjustments. And I enjoy that piece of it.
Sure.
And it's more complicated. And so that's why a lot of fitters don't want to mess with them, or they just have never done it. So they don't really can't relate so much.
Yeah. You're a puzzle solver.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
I like it.
I feel like it. That's something that you appreciate getting to do. Mm. Like you, even in your story, your like life story of what you've navigated through and the decisions you've made, you're always like finding a challenge to figure out.
I'm a solver for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. In life in general. Like it's some people are like, no, I just want to like bitch for a second. I'm like, I know, but how can we fix this? And they're like, no, I don't want to fix it. I just want to like gripe. And I'm like, I don't want to fix it.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. So that's what I love about the bike fits. Cause there's always something different. We can always try something else.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so how often do people come to you for a second look at things?
Yeah.
Cause how it works, you do the initial fit and then people ride for a little bit. You're like, you kind of upfront tell them, and I have to shamelessly say I have not come in for a fit, which I really probably should.
Mm-hmm. We can make that happen.
But you do the fit and then people kind of need to ride for a little bit, figure out if it's working.
Yeah. I would say probably 9 out of 10, I don't see again.
Okay.
I know a lot of fitters that I kind of have built a network with, they will see probably 20 to 30% of their people come back.
Sure.
Early on, I felt I saw a little bit more, and now I think I don't, like percentage isn't as high cause I'm seeing more people.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would say maybe when it's all said and done, maybe it's like 10 to 20% of people come back for a touch up. And some people it's like, we need 2 or 3 touch ups because they're more of a sensitive rider.
Yeah.
Some people you can change something like, okay, cool. Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't feel any different. It feels different. I don't know if it's better or worse. It's just different,
sure,
you know? And that's kind of how I am as an athlete. I was the same way in golf. Get a new golf club. I'm like, I just goes farther. I don't know. That's how I am.
Right.
But some people use something a millimeter and they're like, oh, this feels like trash. No, this isn't working. Huh. So it just depends on the athlete.
Yeah. That's so interesting.
But yeah, I do a 90 day fit guarantee because what's good in here and good on the trainer and good while everything's controlled.
Yeah.
And we've just changed you from where you were. It may feel good, but you need to go put in miles.
Yeah.
And so 3 months is plenty of time. And if we're working together and still trying to figure things out, like the 90 days isn't a dead, like hard deadline. Like let's fix it. And it's all included in the upfront price. And I tell them like, you're not going to hurt my feelings. I don't care if you come back 10 times. Like you came in here for me to help you fix something.
Sure.
Like let's fix it. I don't care what we got to do. We'll find a solution. I will talk to people. And I've had one guy where I paid for a doctor to come in and because it was like, we couldn't figure out the problem. And I was like,
ended up being?
He had a really tight muscle group that we couldn't. And I was looking at it in the neck and it was in his traps. Mm. And so it was a triathlete. And so there's been several things like that where I'm like, okay, I want you to go see this guy. I mean, I don't get a kickback from him, but I'm like, go see this guy. His name's, I call him Dr. Kyle. Go see Dr. Kyle. And I'll text him. I'm like, here's the problems that we're having. Tell me the feedback. And so they'll go to Kyle. Kyle will do his magic. And then he'll send me back a report of like, this person has this and this. He's like, I don't know how to do that on a bike. Well, just with that information, I know what we can set up on the bike and change to find them stability or comfort to get offload, whatever the problem is. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't have a clue. I don't know any of this stuff. Like I would rather have professionals around me that's their thing. And then we can all work together and figure out the solution to the problem. But that's very few times.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Have you ever had someone come in and the fit is already great and you don't need to change anything?
I've had, well, the guy that was in here right before you came in, his was like really good.
Huh.
And it was just a few millimeters here and there all the way around the system.
Okay.
And he was like, oh, this feels completely different, completely better.
Yeah.
But if he didn't have any like major aches and pains. He's like, it just doesn't feel right.
Sure.
And cause it was a new bike. He bought a titanium bike. And so it was like we moved his cleat position, which he needed to go up on a seat height. So we just moved his cleat position, which helped him on his, seat height, which nailed that in. We moved his seat like 5 mils back, and took 2 spacers on his handlebars up. That was it. Huh. There was one try guy who came in one time and I didn't even charge him. I was like, dude, you're nailed. Like you're dialed. Yeah. Does anything hurt? He's like, no, I just felt like I need to get things double checked. I'm like, looks beautiful.
Yeah.
Let me know if something hurts. Like he was the only one I never touched anything.
Sure. Sure.
A lot of times there's like a few little tweaks that we can try. And sometimes it's just like your body's changed. You've gained weight. You've lost weight. You're more fit. You're stiffer. Different goals. Like especially with triathletes, like they go from doing Ironman to doing sprints. Well, they can get more aggressive. You can suffer a little bit more on the bike. You can be a little bit more uncomfortable to be faster. Right.
Yeah.
Where Ironman, it's like, no, comfort's king.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to do like 100-mile rides and they just want to like chill. Okay. Well, let's set your bike up real comfortable.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how fast you go. You just want to hang out with your friends.
Right.
So it needs to be comfortable because you're not crit racing anymore. So let's like lose the really long stem and like not be slammed.
Right.
Right. So
absolutely.
Things change as goals change.
I love that, Ryan, that you work with people at the individual level and figure out what their goals are. It's not just like a prescription. Oh, like, let me figure out how this bike geometry is going to fit your body based on the information I have. Like, I think that's one of the hardest things about being an athlete, professionals that you go to, like, for example, like if you're an endurance athlete and you go to a doctor, doctors are so used to treating people that have major health conditions, because that's like what we are living in the United States,
right.
Like obesity and diabetes or pre-diabetes, that when you're a healthy individual, you're usually not getting the best advice because there's sort of just this standard that's being given to everyone, but you seem to really focus on what the individual's needs and goals are. And I think that's such a gift to our community.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. But that's how it should be. It's the same with your training plan.
Yeah.
Your training plan should fit your life.
Right.
Like sometimes you're going to have to sacrifice depending on what the goal is.
Right.
But like none of us are getting paid. We're all like old people in spandex with helmets on. Like, come on, you know, like loosen up.
Right.
But what is your goal? And then we should fit around that instead of like, you come in, here's the number. Cause there is no number. Like, and it's always changing. Like your body's different in the morning compared to at night. So like there's a range of everything. It's an art and science. And that's what I always tell people. I'm like, we're going to get to where I like it. And then we're going to do some things that you tell me if it feels better or worse. Cause you know better than I do.
Sure.
It's just because the computer and this fancy technology tells me that this is the green zone. It may not be the green zone for you.
Right.
Right. So we need to go with what is in the range, but feels the best.
Yeah.
And that's how we should fit. That's how your bike should feel. It's a really fancy bike and this is where you should be and do it.
And that's it.
Yeah. No, it's going to hurt. No, it shouldn't hurt.
I mean, right.
Sometimes it's going to hurt a little bit, but.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And so Ryan, also you're doing so many different things. Like you have a full-time job, you have this business, like you're fully committed. And then you decided to start this podcast. Can you tell me a little bit why you decided to start this podcast? Uh-huh. Like, I think as a highly motivated individual, it's easy to like overcommit yourself. And what made you choose to make time for this?
I love podcasts a ton. It's all I listen to. Like I don't listen to radio really hardly ever anymore. It's just podcasts and Audible, mainly podcasts. And, so I love that. And I did a podcast years ago about like training when I was having my training business was going. And I just did a lot of the local athletes, like talking to them about what their training was, how do they train and just kind of getting that from them.
Can you still access that?
Yeah. It's Conquer Training.
Okay.
Is cool. The name of it. And it's still out there. And it was good and it was fun. And then it was hard to get athletes and new athletes and it was just hard to chase that down. And so when I got into this, there was a couple of different reasons to do it. For one, cause I just love them. I love talking to people and hearing their stories and like, that's just, I'm a talker. But I like it more on a one-on-one basis of like a for real conversation. I don't like networking events. I hate that crap. I don't want to go. I don't want to ask you like all the generic stupid questions. Yeah. Like I don't care and you don't care either. So let's not even act like we do.
Yeah.
So that's just how I am with everything. I'm like, let's just get, what do you want from me?
Yeah.
You know, so I don't like that, but this, I can have like real conversations with people and have real, like, and just like learn about somebody. And cause all these people, I see them, we all ride with each other.
Yeah.
And we all have been around each other for years, but I don't know anything about you.
Right. Yeah.
And so this was a great way to just like learn who all my people are. Like a real learn. So that was a big part of it. And I felt like we have so many like really just amazing people in our community.
We do.
Endurance community. Yeah. And there's always a reason of why they do these stupid things. So I'm like, where did that come from? So there's just that intrigue piece of it. And just getting for everybody to learn how awesome our athletes are in our community.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a great way to spread it and do it. And nobody was doing it. And I kept trying to find something and nobody's doing anything close to it. And so it really just came out of like scratching my own itch because I'm like, well, I want to know what Alan's story, you know, I want to know. Well, and then I heard about Jennifer's story. I'm like, well, I want to hear about that. I don't know her past, you know,
totally.
Why is she so sweet and wants to do all these things, you know? So it was more of the intrigue piece of it. And then the selfish part of it was I want to, with this business, and I want this to be my full-time business at some point.
Yeah.
I want to be fully invested into the community. And what can I do? The way that I look at it in any of my business things is how can I serve and the rest will take care of itself.
Sure.
And so I felt this was a way that I could serve the community and serve like intrigue, I guess, that people have or wanting to know other people or whatever it is. But in serving that, it's going to help grow my business.
Right.
And then I become a focal point for the cycling community. Like people are like, oh, have you heard about the podcast? And then my name comes up. Oh, he owns a bike fit studio. I need to fit. I should go see him. So it was all of those pieces. It was a branding and marketing piece, which I guess I probably shouldn't tell people that.
But there was a business
side of it that intrigued me. And there was a major gap in the market, just like with the bike fits here. There's a major gap in the market. And so it was just really, truly scratching my own itch and filling a hole in the system.
Sure. And Ryan, if I can ask.
Ask whatever.
How far into the future do you see that being a potential reality to be able to do this full time?
Don't know.
Yeah.
Because for one, I have like the greatest boss on the planet and we are like best buds. And I, as long as she is the CEO at the BBB. I can't imagine not working with her.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long that's going to be. I mean, it could be 6 months and it could be 10 years. I have no idea. So I can't imagine not spending every day working with the team that I have, that I get to work with. The team is amazing. My team that I get to work with, all of my ladies, I love them to death. So I can't imagine not being with them. But you know, the dream is to have this as being my full-time gig for many reasons. COVID really changed the direction of that, in two ways. Like, one, I think landscape is going to change a lot, which should help this business.
Yeah.
So that may make it go faster, but at some point I have to jump off the ledge of like, I can only trade so many hours for dollars.
Sure.
And so I have to like sell different things and, you know, kind of change the business plan a little bit. I don't ever want to be a bike shop. I don't want to compete with bike shops. I don't want to stock inventory or any of that stuff. So it's, again, it's finding the holes in the market as things play out. Is it, I don't know, is it selling shoes? Is it selling fancy kits? Is it selling, like, what is it that nobody wants to stock? Cause it sucks. It's a nightmare for a bike shop to carry.
Yeah.
I'll carry it. And then I'll be your friend as dear bike shop and not be your competitor. And then we can continue to work together. And so I think as things continue to unfold over the next few years with COVID and post COVID and all that kind of stuff, and kind of just see where the market goes, I think that'll give me a better understanding, but it won't be any time in the next probably 3 to 5 years, probably.
How can people support you best?
In these adventures?
Yeah. In getting to your goal.
I think the biggest thing is just really, I don't think there's anything that outside of what people are already doing, but just by spreading the word.
Yeah.
Listen to the podcast, like, because everything is going to stem off of that, because it's a marketing piece. It's a community piece. It's, a love piece, like, right? So if everybody just does that, like, I'm going to be all right. And this is going to continue to grow because I'm going to get more referrals. I'm going to get more fits. So those things will continue to just go. I think if people just continue to spread the word, or like, hey, I need, this hurts. Well, it doesn't have to hurt. You should at least get it checked out. Right. And so I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah.
Cool.
Just being more aware of what's going on in their cycling, like their cycling world. I think that would be the best way to support me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We can do that.
Sweet. That's easy enough. I don't ask for much.
Yeah.
I don't ask for much. Just if you hurt, come see me.
Awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And even if you don't, if you just want to learn a little bit more.
Come hang out.
Yeah.
Because that was the whole idea of putting a place by downtown and having like this look that I have in here.
Yeah, it's awesome. If you haven't been here, you should just come here just to see what it's like, because it's sick.
I love it. And this is exactly what I wanted. I wanted a fridge full of beer, and I wanted people to be on a place where people ride by, they stop and refill their water bottles. And then like, they're just hanging out to cool off in the summer, or like not getting a bike fit. Like, I want it to be a hub, like a community hub for endurance athletes or people that want to, you know, like do a run out of here. Like, I don't care. Like, just, are you being healthy? Then cool. Like, swing by.
Yeah. Come hang out.
Yeah. That's it.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah. What else you want to know?
Gosh, I feel like there's still so many unknowns too. I mean, so outside of cycling and endurance athlete stuff, what interests you, Ryan? Like, who are you outside of that? What do you identify with?
My fur babies. Like, I'm an animal
lover. Yes. Tell us about your dogs.
I'm an animal lover.
Is it dogs? Cats? Uh-huh.
Two dogs.
Okay.
So Jack and Nova are my two dogs. Sweet. So Jack's a blue heeler mutt, and Nova is like a pity mastiff. So she's a big girl. Jack's a lunatic, and they're no kids or anything. And so they're the babies. And so they're amazing. But outside of that, like, my dream scenario is having like 5 acres, and I want a mini farm. I want everything mini. Everything. So, yeah.
That's so great.
Wouldn't it be awesome?
Random, but awesome.
Yes. That's my dream. So, and I kind of want it out like on a gravel area so everybody can like start and stop gravel rides there. Because if we were sitting out on my patio and like a mini donkey came by and there was a mini cow and then you saw a little pig. Oh, and then the mini horse was in the house. Yeah. Like, you'd be like, how can you not be happy?
Yeah, that's so true.
So I want all the minis.
No way.
Yeah, that's the
Make
dream.
Make that happen, please.
I agree. Please. Yes. That's my true end dream goal in life is to have a mini farm.
Cool.
Of all the animals that I can think of.
Beyond the success of Ellis Endurance mm-hmm. mini farm.
That's it.
Here we go.
Yeah. So I love animals like big time. So that's a big one. My family is massive to me. Mm-hmm. And my buddies, like, I mean, we're still my buddies from college. I mean, one's coming in from LA next week and we're all getting together. We get together once a month. All of my guys from college that played golf with.
No way. Once a month, mm-hmm. the five of you that were on that team?
No, that was my high school group. But my college group, we get together once a month because everybody kind of has kids and busy jobs and all stuff. So we do a set date once a month and we all meet up for beers, whoever can make it that night. And we still are really connected. And And so, I mean, I have a buddy who played on the tour for, he was a freshman when I was a senior. And he played on the PGA for 10 years and he was here this weekend and he lives in Dallas now. We went and had dinner together and hung out. So like that core group of guys, and same with my high school guys, like just very loyal to my people. Like when I have my tight group, like we're a tight group. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And your family, you have one brother?
I have one older brother.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And so what did your parents or someone in your life do to make family important?
I think it goes to grandpa on my mom's side. So up until, and I haven't thought about this in forever, but up until it would have been my youngest cousin was in Iraq. Mm. So that would have been in like 06, 05, whatever, whenever Iraq fell. I don't remember what the year, whenever that was, he was there. That was the first Christmas Eve because we always got together for Christmas Eve. Yeah. Everybody, no matter where you lived, what you were doing. Christmas Eve at Granny and Papa's house.
Yeah.
That was the first time any member of the family had ever not been at Christmas Eve. And my mom's the oldest since my mom was born.
Wow. That's hard.
So yeah, it was like, so everybody always did. And so that, I think he's the one that really made family so important. Mm. We don't have a big family, which makes it a lot easier. And then my family, I was very lucky that my parents are still married and my grandparents were married for almost 70 years. And my parents have been married for a little over 50 years. And so like,
that's so incredible.
He's super lucky. Yeah. I'm super lucky to grow up in that. And my dad was self-employed. So he was able to come to all of our sporting events. Like I am beyond lucky when it comes to family. And so it was always very supportive, you know, as far as like all of your adventures and stuff, they would be there, even if they thought you were stupid, they were, you know, they'd still be there. And watching, like, I remember going to my first triathlon. I mean, I was, gosh, I mean, it was 12, 14 years ago, mom and dad were there.
Yeah.
Even at this point, you know, if I was going to go do something, mom and dad would be there. And so it's just always been a key part of the life.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Super lucky in that regard.
Cool. Is there anything else you want to add?
I don't know. I don't like bragging on myself or talking.
Someone were to brag for you, what is like the coolest thing about you that they would tell?
Gosh, I don't know.
Or like the biggest accomplishment or
like sporting wise.
Yeah.
I've had like good teams and that's always been awesome. So I have a decent resume of like random crap in my past. So, but yeah, so we got second in state my senior year in golf, which it sucked that we got beat. But I was like all conference, all regional, all that stuff, all state, like all every year, like freshman through senior year. And then in golf in college, I was, conference player of the year and regional player of the year. And then was all conference and all regional, all 4 years of college. All American in 1 year, and we won nationals my senior year, which is like a perfect way to end the career. So golf was good, but nobody knows me from golf in this world and nobody plays golf. So I don't ever talk about it. But I had guys on the team that were way better than me for sure. So that was good. And nobody really knows that, I guess. And then multi-sport wise or like in the endurance world, it was basically because nobody was there, but the Draper was a national championship one time for long course duathlon.
No way.
Yeah. That's and I won cool. that like age group wise. So I got that. That was cool.
Wow.
And then 2 years ago, I like trained really hard in the summer for a big mountain bike event. And so I was pretty fit and I was like, well, I'm just going to do some sprint triathlons and stuff just because
Why not?
Yeah. And so I got All American that year in triathlon. So that was cool. So those are my big athletic things.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then I won Tour de Dirt this year in the Cat 2.
I didn't know that. That's so great.
Mediocre old guy category.
Whatever.
The jersey that I was lucky enough to get this year.
That's so sweet and awesome.
That was fun. So I'm excited for the jersey to put up in the rafters.
Yeah, heck yeah. Yeah,
so that'll be fun.
Yeah, another reason to come visit. There's some jerseys in the rafters.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, shall we move on to yard sale?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
I don't know about this side of it.
Okay,
because I've been thinking about some of these questions. I'm like, crap, which one is she going to ask me? What am I going to say? I never had to think about it.
I know. So this is always, I think any podcast that chooses to do this sort of like rapid fire kind of question series is so great, because even if you can't listen to the whole thing, you can like go to the end and be like, oh my gosh, now I know this thing about this person. So, okay, the first question that we're going to ask is, what is your favorite piece of cycling equipment that's under $100?
You've studied.
I have notes.
I've been thinking about this all day, trying to come up with the right answer. I would say the best thing that I've bought for less than $100 is blackbib.com.
Okay.
They make three different things now, like levels now of bibs.
Oh, really?
And all of them are under $100.
Awesome.
So their most expensive ones now are like $80.
Cool.
And they didn't have that one when I bought them like 6 months ago. So I have them, they're like $60.
Yeah.
They're amazing.
Really?
They're just black. The chamois great.
Cool.
The straps are great. And then they have some jerseys. The jerseys weren't so good.
Okay.
But they may have different ones now, but they have like vests and all this stuff, and everything's cheap. Everything's under $100.
Awesome.
And it's really good quality stuff. So
cool.
Not to tell people to go buy stuff online, but blackbibs.com, if you're looking for really good quality bibs that aren't $250, then check them out.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. That's really good to know. Cause it's
very expensive.
Yeah.
That's
why
expensive.
I have like three pairs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this, if they're like 60, 70, $80, you're like, well, I can replace them every, you know, once a year and get like two or three new ones, and you're not like spending $500 on a cycling kit.
Laundry every day.
Yes, yes, exactly. So blackbibs.com, their top end bibs are great.
Okay, sweet. Awesome. Okay, so Ryan, I know that you've done all sorts of athletic events, but what has been the hardest day as an endurance athlete for you? The most challenging event you've ever done?
I think the one that mentally broke me the most was Breck Epic 2 years ago. So it's a mountain bike stage race in Breckenridge.
Okay.
And they have two versions. You can do a 6 day version or a 3 day version. And then you can either do the first 3 days or the last 3 days. Hmm. And I did the last 3 days. Maybe I'll do the 6 day version. Maybe at some point in life, but
you will.
Maybe. Saxby keeps trying to get me to go do it, but
yeah, do it together. Why
maybe.
Not?
But the second day was over Wheeler Pass. And if you're basically, Breck, you're starting at 10,000 feet and then you go up in every direction. It's the coolest event I've ever been a part of. The incredible scenes, like everything about it was just amazing.
Mm.
But that day, your first 3 miles took me about an hour, and you basically ride up a gravel road.
Wow.
At like three
miles.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh.
You had enough gears that you could pedal, but it was just a long, steep gravel road. And
were
so,
you looking at your watch or your
Garmin, you're going
or
like
whatever,
3 to 5 miles an hour the whole time.
I would be crying.
Yeah. And you're just like, well, I'm here. Like, I can't do anything about it. It's just, and so, but then you get to single track and it's like unrideable. Like the pros rode it, and the pros are like the world champion 24 hour person, the world champion this, this guy's Olympics, this guy's UCI. Like that's the pros. And then there's normal people. The normal people, you can't ride it. It was so miserable. So it was single track. You pushed your bike so that was like at mile 3.5 to get to mile 6.5, which was at top. Well, you have like a little gap. It took us, I was about 3 hours to get there. So you pushed your bike for 3 miles on a single track over 12,000, like 500 feet.
Wow.
And then you got on it for like 4 seconds, it seemed like, to go down the backside before you went up and did it all over again. And
there was massive rock gardens and you couldn't ride them because you were going so slow and you're at like over 12,000 feet. So it took me about over 4 hours to get like 6.5 miles in before I could start going downhill.
Wow.
It was miserable.
Yeah.
Your calves hurt.
That's
you hard. Can't even push your bike because you're so out of breath. Like,
yeah,
it was miserable.
And that was the first day of it?
It was the second day
of
it.
Okay.
But if you're doing the whole thing, it's the fifth day. Yeah. And then you get to the top. So I get to the very top and you have this amazing view over the top over Breck and it's just gorgeous. And I've never been at 12.5 on a bike for sure. And then the first like 50 yards, it was so technical and steep. And if you fall, you would go off the mountain that you couldn't ride it. And I was like, if I have to walk down this damn mountain now.
Yeah.
And at that point I broke, like I was broken. And then you're there like, well, you got to get down.
Right. Right.
And so that day only ended up being like 24 miles. It was like 6,000 feet of climbing. Oh. And it took me like 5.5 hours and it was all like over 11,000 feet. It was the hardest one day that I've ever done. It was rough.
In those moments, like what keeps you going? Like, do you put on music? Is there like something that you like start thinking about that gives you motivation?
Yeah, I remember that one. Sometimes it's music. I save caffeine and music until like I absolutely need it on like long days.
Yeah.
So some days I don't use it, some days I do. But that day we had just got done doing some stuff with Bryce, the guy that has cerebral palsy, for some multi-sport stuff. And all I kept thinking about, and I thought, because I did some stuff with Go Mitch Go and Mitchell, who passed away from leukemia. Mm. And that day, that whole weekend when I was there, I was like, Bryce would do anything to not be in a wheelchair and be here to do this. He would love to be suffering doing this.
Yeah.
Mitchell would love the opportunity to be in the mountains, like riding a bicycle, like shut up. You're riding a bicycle in the most beautiful place ever. Mm. Like, look around, like you did this to yourself. Like, just embrace it. Like, that is why you're here, was to hurt and to be miserable, to push yourself. Like, you're in it. Enjoy it. Yeah.
And sort of forget about like this, everything has to be a competition, that it's just a gift to be able to move your body.
Yeah. And there's times that was not my thought.
Yeah.
But fair. Would be what would snap me out of those down times was like, these people would love the opportunity to be here. And my oldest nephew, his best friend, like that they grew up together. He was 18 and he was going through cancer and missed his senior year of high school, is this whole thing. And it was about that same time frame. And I'm like, these people would do anything to be able to have the chance to ride a bicycle. Like, why are you bitching? Like, just enjoy it. And that would snap me out of it. But there were still like those sucky times, you know, where you're like, this is stupid. I hate everything about this. And I wish I would have a mechanical because I could go home.
Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah. That's so real too. Like, there has to be a reason.
There has to be a chain that can break or a wheel that can break. Something needs to go wrong right now.
And it can't be my fault.
Right. What rock can I hit?
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I love that. Okay. And what about your favorite event? Whether it be local or, you know, national, do you have an event that you're like, everyone should see or participate in this event once in their life?
I think if you're a mountain biker, you should do Breck Epic.
Okay.
If you're a triathlete, you should do Triple T, which is a stage race in triathlon.
Yeah.
It's in Ohio. They used to have one in North Carolina. I think they only have the Ohio one now. But you're on Friday, you do a super short sprint triathlon, like really, really short.
Okay.
And then the next morning you do an Olympic triathlon. And then that afternoon you do an Olympic triathlon. And then the next morning you do a half Ironman.
Okay. Incredible. That sounds hard.
Did you do it? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was hard.
Yeah.
But super fun. And you kind of become such a clique with those people.
Yeah.
Because you're around each other for 3 straight days and suffering together and hanging out together. And it's a very small kind of event. Mm-hmm. But it's just a cool, something different, totally out of the box at triathlon, like multisport, you would never do.
Sure.
So that would be my triathlon one. And then Breck Epic would be my mountain bike one. And then gravel, I would just say find some really good gravel roads with friends, not necessarily a sanctioned event. Just like keep gravel what it is and just go like find a cool route. There's some really great ones around Wichita Mountains, or we do some great ones in Tuttle area. Like find a really cool route and go with a friend or bike pack it with a friend and just like truly just do what you should be doing on gravel.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, Ryan, you mentioned podcasts are your thing. Mm-hmm. What are your top 3 go-to podcasts?
Tim Ferriss.
Okay.
Is a big one. There's some industry ones that nobody's going to care about. I like Gary Vaynerchuk's stuff in spurts.
Yeah.
He's really good. And then he just says the same stuff all the time and he kind of wears me out. Then
what does he talk about?
He's a marketing guy. He's a business guy, but it's all business marketing and it's all like kind of a self-motivation. Like, well, if you want to do it, then just go do it. But he's a like legit businessman.
Cool.
In all of his books and stuff, it's good, but it's all based around kind of marketing and stuff like that. But it's more than just marketing stuff. Tim Ferriss, Vaynerchuk. And then I really like cycling tips and some of those that are just like industry ones that I always listen to. I always listen to the cycling tips podcast. Like every time they have one, there's a golf one that I listen to called Subpar. So if you're a golfer,
it's Subpar.
Subpar is the best. They're so good. They get players and they tell like behind the rope stories. They're like, oh, so-and-so won that party. Do you remember his victory party at so-and-so's house? And you passed out.
I love that.
And talk to the caddies and all the shitty places that they stay in, right. You know, because they don't have any money or whatever. Like it's just those kinds of stories. So that's always an entertaining podcast. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Last question.
Okay.
Well, actually, no, before I say this last question, I have to add this in because this morning I was on a ride with Super Dave.
Oh gosh.
And he was like, what are you doing the rest of the day, Perrin? And I was like, oh, well, I'm meeting at Lively and then I'm going to go actually to Ryan Ellis's place and we're going to record a podcast. But he will actually be the person to be featured. And Super Dave was like, make sure you mention to him that I think he is the most beautiful man in Oklahoma. I think he said like he's the most beautiful man on this planet. Mm-hmm. So I had to just pop that in there real quick.
Thank you, Super Dave. I appreciate that.
So that you can't cut it out.
Oh, man.
But yes. So everyone also visit Ellis Endurance to see the most beautiful man on this planet.
Oh my God. That's ridiculous.
But anyway, final question. Oh, and Ryan, thank you again so much for making this time. But final question is just what is your dream bike?
Man, I am not loyal to anything, as far as companies,
which is perfect. Cause then it actually lets you dream.
Yeah. I think. All my bikes are different. Like everyone's a different brand. That's tough. I don't really have like one bike that I've always loved and looked at. On a tri bike side of things, I love the new Canyons. I think they're beautiful machines. Like beautiful.
They're gorgeous bikes.
Yeah. So I love them for the tri side. The mountain bike, I have a Niner and I love it. Like I really like the new Scott mountain bike.
Yeah.
The new XC bike. I don't remember what it's called. But it has like this integrated, that way that they did the rear shock, the rear suspension, it's inside the frame.
Oh, interesting. So that's crazy. So cool.
It's so cool. It's an XC bike. So I like my all trail bikes because it helps me get over things that are hard. But the Scott, I think, is a super sexy mountain bike. I like that a lot. Gravel side of things, I love my 3T. I love it. I love the way it looks.
Yeah, I like those bikes.
I love their color schemes that they have on everything. I like the person who designed it. He was the one that used to own Cervelo. And so he's bringing a lot of that aero technology from the tri world into like a gravel scene a little bit.
Cool.
And changing some shapes that have never been changed. So I just like it because it's so different. The ones I always see that I think are beautiful are Allied. Anything Allied is beautiful. Like they're just sexy bikes.
Yeah.
Like everything about them.
Yeah. Every time I see Andy's gold bike, I'm like,
everything.
Okay, little tear rolling down my cheek because that's the most beautiful bike I've ever seen.
The integration is beautiful, like the handlebars and the stems and all the stuff. They're a pain in the ass to work on, and it better be right when you order it because if it's not, you're going to be in a really expensive fix.
Sure.
But they're beautiful, and their color schemes are off the charts. Yeah. They nail it on color schemes. So, I know I didn't really give you one, but those are the ones that I think are just really beautiful.
Cool. And there's a lot of options.
I get a lot of titanium bikes that come through here, and every time I see a titanium bike, I'm just like super in love and think it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I don't own one and I probably will never own one, but they're so pretty. So pretty. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
You've been very gentle and nice. Cause I was warned by one of your friends.
Really?
Uh-huh. That you are like Oprah and probably would make me cry.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. That's so funny. Uh-huh. No, that's interesting.
She was in here recently. She just moved.
to Denver.
Oh,
and she was like, aww. Oh, that's because I told her that you were coming to interview me. She's like, oh, she'll pull it all out of you. She's like, every time we sit down and talk, she just like asks like two questions. And then by the time it's over with, I've told her everything. And I'm like, great. Wonderful.
I feel like I sometimes have, you know, the mistake of asking people questions that lead them to sharing really personal details mm-hmm. of their life, which is such a gift when people are willing to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, she's a good person.
She is a good person. Yeah. So I was like, oh, so I couldn't have a beer or drink before you did this. Cause I couldn't cry on the podcast, not round one.
Mm-mm. Yeah. But also I feel like Ryan, there's so much more to know about you, and I feel like people just needed even just like the surface to start. Like, I think, you know, just your story and all the different things in your journey and in terms of, you know, what you think in life you're supposed to do and how that changes and shifts, mm-hmm. Is really beautiful and such an important message to share mm-hmm. of like, just keep following what feels right.
I agree. Yeah. So just love each other a little bit more.
Yes.
That's it.
Just
love a little bit more. That's it. That's my biggest thing. It's just like, you know, like if everybody would just be a little bit nicer to each other, like life would be a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you so much for taking time out of your day to do this.
Of course.
And bringing this idea up. So I was a perfect co-host.
Awesome.
So thank you.
Ryan, thank you.
All right.
All right.